I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, and I am the Natural Birth Podcast host. I'm a former midwife turned midwitch, and I now work with women worldwide, assisting them in having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. I offer one-on-one sessions and packages and online courses for conscious mamas who don't want to leave their birth up to chance. I also mentor current and aspiring birth workers in my Sacred Birth Worker Mentorship Program. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment right now and leave a review. They mean the world to me and is also your way of helping me reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. Together, we are changing the birth narrative, one birth story at a time. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Patricia. Patricia is a mama of two from the UK. As so often on this podcast, she has a story of having a medicalized first hospital birth and then a redemptive natural home birth for her second. In this episode, she shares briefly about her first, and then we dive on into her second, which was a planned home birth with a midwife that ended up being an unplanned, unassisted home birth. Her second birth happened so quickly. Patricia had her friends over in the morning expecting to go for a walk at 10:30, but by 11:57, she was birthing her baby. Such a difference from her first hospital birth, which ended with an episiotomy and a vacuum delivery. Are you planning on having a home birth? Then you can download my free home birth checklist that I give to all my mamas who's having a home birth. In it, I share how to prepare the birth space, what you need to source for a home birth. I share the best labor stations, nourishment, and midwifery insider tips on what will make a world of difference during your labor and birth. Find the link to the download in the show notes. This episode is sponsored by my favorite women's health supplement brand, Needed. I'm so grateful to finally have found a supplement brand that I trust and that I can recommend to my clients who are seeking assistance in fertility and conception, as well as for pregnancy and postpartum support. Most vitamins on the market are just expensive pee, and I love that Needed's products are bioavailable and come in forms that your body can easily absorb and at optimal levels, not just the bare minimum. I take Needed supplements myself. For example, in my morning cacao, I use their collagen from organic grass-fed cows, as well as their immune-supporting powder, including elderberry, zinc, and pre- and postbiotic powder. It's delicious, and I feel amazing using it. If you want to optimize your health, then I invite you to pop on over to thisisneeded.com via the link in the show notes, which gives you automatic discounts on their website with the coupon code TheNaturalBirthPodcast.
Hi, Trish, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Yes, lovely.
It's beautiful to have
really
you.
Well, thank you.
So today we're going to dive on into your birth that was just a few weeks ago. But you've had two babas, and we will start with the first. However, the first one was a bit of a medicalized event in the hospital. Hey, so what we're going to do is just kind of briefly share a bit about what happened, what you learned, and what made you then choose to have a home birth for your second. So with no further ado, Trish, please share with us about falling pregnant, choosing to have a hospital birth, and your preparation for that birth and how it unfolded from that.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, I fell pregnant like lots of people during COVID. Right. Obviously, being stuck at home, nothing else to do. Why not? But it did mean that my pregnancy and the way things ran were probably very different to how they were previously before COVID. So most of it was on the phone appointments. So I didn't see anyone until quite late on. I thought I'd have the same midwife all the way through. Obviously here in England, we've got the NHS, which is fantastic, but obviously things were a bit stretched and maybe not running quite how they were before. So I had a different midwife all the way through, which actually, compared to my second birth, where I had the same midwife all the way through, bar one appointment, it was vastly different to have someone who knows you and who knows your body and knows your without having to, you know, give the spiel the whole time when you see someone new. So that was challenging. I hated being pregnant. I really, really hated being pregnant. I was sick with Freddie, my first one, all the way through till 36 weeks. But obviously being COVID, I was at home and I slept all night and I slept most of the day. And I just sort of paused to go for a walk, have some food and then sleep again. And I was able to do that. Whereas with the second one, you've got a toddler running around and there's no sleeping at all. So, and the prep that I did for that second birth was I did a hypnobirthing course. For the first one. So my husband and I did a hypnobirthing course together just because we were recommended to do that by one of my husband's friends. So I was obviously doing lots of reading and all that beforehand. I don't think it doesn't matter how much you can prepare when you don't know what you're going to. It's going to be such a new experience.
Yeah, very true. So with this first, you prepared, but did you ever consider a home birth for your first? Or was it always?
I did consider. I wanted a home birth. And with they just didn't have enough midwives with COVID. So they'd shut down all home births, except the week before I was 38 weeks. They then opened them up again, by which point we kind of got into our head that we're going to go to hospital. They have one pool at the hospital, one birthing pool. And I was really lucky to get that. But interestingly enough, not many people wanted, which I was flabbergasted about. But yeah, so I had a difficult pregnancy. It wasn't fun. I did the hypnobirthing, which was beautiful. And it was beautiful to get my husband on board with that because he was the buy-in for that. He was the one who wanted to be involved. And that was a way of doing it that he was happy with. So I went into... Well, both pregnancies, I wasn't sure I'd gone into labor. I'd lost my mucus plug the first time during the day. And I was a bit like, right, it's going to happen tonight. And it did. And I sort of like felt some weird little like fleshy feelings. And then obviously it gets tighter and things like that. And my cat, really interestingly, was on my tummy the whole time. Because we were lying in bed and she was just resting on my tummy. And then I was lying on my side and she climbed up over to me and she was kind of like laying on my side. And she was really funny through both my pregnancies. When I was pregnant, she it sounds terrible, but she pulls out all her fur on her stomach. So she gets really stressed when I'm pregnant, pulls out all her fur. And as soon as I've had the baby, she stops doing it. So now she's just a bit patchy. But she obviously has still some sort of, I don't know, some sort of hormonal response to my hormones.
That is so interesting. I've never heard that. Poor cat.
Well, poor cat, but she's so connected to, I know, poor cat. But she's so connected to it, and she absolutely loves the babies when they're born. And she's very involved with them and just wants to be around them and like sleep close to them. And it's just this lovely. But yeah, so I'd gone into labor. It was late at night, and I'd put towels next to the bed, or my husband put towels next to my bed. I had my birthing ball, and I was rolling on that and just breathing and having this like wonderful, super chilled experience, and just breathing through everything. Mm. And I'd obviously read about the mucus plug, and that had gone. And then I had this, what I now know is a bloody show. But at the time, it's not something I'd come across. And I was like, oh, blood, okay. So I'd phone the midwives at the med center. And they'd said, well, if it's bigger than a 50p piece, we think you should come in, which it was. And at that point, my labor did stall quite a lot. So, and I wasn't aware of this in hindsight. It's a wonderful thing. Just the things that you learn, you wish you could have done differently first time around. But obviously, the birth that you're given, or the birth that you had, is just what you have to go through. Mm. And yes, so I'd gone into labor. We live 5 minutes away from the hospital. We're so close. So I'd gone in, we'd parked for the back door. Turns out, in the middle of the night, the back door's closed. So we had to walk all the way around the hospital, went up and checked in, and they'd given us the birthing pool. Oh, that was the other thing to mention. In my birth plan, I'd said I didn't want an internal examination or anything else like that. And I think they just read the first paragraph and said, oh, you want a pool birth? Okay, we'll get the pool ready, and let's just check you. And kind of like, you know, in the heat of the moment, you're like, okay, fine, what, just fine. So they did an internal examination, and they said, oh, great, you're 6 centimeters, pop in the bath, in the pool, which is all fine. I mean, it was fine. At the time, you just go with it, because these are the experts, and you just trust them. So that's what I did, and I labored in the pool, and it was beautiful. I had my music, and I had my oils, and my husband was there, and he was like stroking my head, and I was just leaning over the side of the bath, and it was wonderful until I got to 10 centimeters, and they're like, right, 10 centimeters, go push. Right. And I never had the urge to push. I never felt my waters go. So I was obviously pushing for 2 hours, or I think it was 2 hours I was pushing for.
So did they then do a vaginal examination to tell you that you were?
They did. Yeah, right. They did.
And so what made them do that? What made them ask you to, you know, if it was okay for them to check you at that time?
I think it's every 4 hours they do a check. And then and that's the other thing that was about the hospital birth. Every like 15 minutes, they get the Doppler on you to check heart rate. And so they were doing the Doppler. They did the internal examination. They told me to push. So I did that for 2 hours, and then they obviously, with the Doppler, when you stop pushing, they're checking every 5 minutes. Yeah. So there's a lot going on. And then they're like, oh, his heart rate's dropped. We need to whip you out of the bath. Episiotomy, feet in the stirrups, push. But by that point, I'd completely checked out. So the only part of my labor I remember is being in the pool and having this lovely time with all the music and everything else. And as soon as I was on the bed, at that point, I checked out. I don't remember any of that. And I think my husband had a lot of trauma around that, because he found it very scary. The room was suddenly full of people. And it was scary for him, but I wasn't there. And then obviously this baby just got plumped into my chest, which was lovely. And that was my birth. And during COVID time, during COVID, my husband was allowed to stay for a little while, and then he got sent home. So I was on my own, on a ward, with this new baby. And I was like, oh, how do I change a nappy? And it was all quite shocking.
Sounds a bit overwhelming. So
it was a bit overwhelming.
So when your baby came out, was your baby fine?
He was fine. He was absolutely fine. He was perfect. His head was at an angle. So the ventouse was actually on the side of the head, and that's where the lump was. And obviously now knowing more, the whole rest and be grateful stage, and having never got the urge to push, I didn't know what that felt like. And he probably just needed time to straighten his head out and just work his way down and just have time. And his heart rate wouldn't have changed, or it may have changed, but through these spikes of contractions and his movements, it's natural. It would have been fine had I think had I been given the time to just let my body do it.
Yeah, that was a big takeaway, wasn't it?
So that was my big takeaway.
So it sounds like that you were in this hospital where they have all these routine hospital procedures that they always do, right? Which I have a free ebook that everyone can just download and learn and make a very informed plan if you're going into hospital so you don't end up
in that stage.
This kind of birth that so many women have. Like, you know, it's unfortunately,
so common.
And you know, when you're pushing your baby, first of all, like, just because you're 10 centimeters doesn't mean that you're ready to push your baby out, right? Just like you mentioned, the rest and be grateful stage that is, you know, that it's called, can be for 10 minutes, it can be for 20 minutes, it can be for half an hour longer, where you even have a big pause, where you have no contractions for a while, where you can just be. And it's about that head getting further down so you get that urge to push, which you weren't allowed in quotation marks.
Yeah.
You have that pause to just follow your body, because that's not what the policies and guidelines tell midwives and nurses and doctors that it's supposed to do, right? And this is the danger with the vaginal examinations that you said, that you actually said in your letter that you didn't want these routine vaginal examinations. But again, when you come in, you're such in a vulnerable state that a lot of times, and you shouldn't have to advocate. That is what the letter is for. And that's also why I really say, if you ever go into hospital, have a doula, have a spiritual midwife, have a birth support that can assist you and be your voice, so you don't have to, because you shouldn't. And for many women, you can't, like, just like you're in the birth realm. You're just in that deep birth bubble and you should stay there. And it sounded like, really, if you had been given the time, you could have birthed that baby beautifully in that pool. And on another note, it is actually normal for the heart rate to drop sometimes during the pushing phase, because head compression, cord compression, it is okay. It's okay. But in hospital, you're not really allowed to have that time for the baby to recover, for you to change your position, for you to take a few deep breaths to oxygenate that baby, you know?
And all that.
Whisked out, and it's an emergency.
It feels like a panic. But having spoken to a lot of mums who I was in groups with at the time, I was the one who had this magical birth, because their births were so different. They had inductions, they had forceps, and that's normal. That's considered normal. So my normal birth was the dreamy birth. And yet I my take back from that was, and I had thought it was a dreamy birth until I became pregnant with my second one. And then you have to start thinking about birth again. And actually, I was holding on to so much trauma around that. And even though I wasn't mentally present for that really scary stage, I was carrying a lot of it.
Absolutely. It's in your body. It's in your cells. And
through,
when you dissociate like you did, which is so normal when you're experiencing something really scary, which it is when it's an emergency, or at least a perceived emergency in the room, right? You know, and it's happening to your body, and you're kind of the passenger to this event happening to you and around you. It's natural for you to dissociate to protect yourself.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that that's not then carried within you, because that's how we protect yourself. You just kind of, you know, push it
just
down.
Shut it down, completely.
Which is so important to then work with and be with and work through if you're going to have another baby, or even if you're not going to have another baby, like, just heal that.
Because you do carry that, you do carry it with you.
Definitely. It affects you so deeply. I mean, I do birth debriefs with all kinds of women. I've had women in their 60s sit and share their birth story and cry to me. Like, you carry it for the rest of your life if you don't look at it and talk about it, heal it, debrief it with somebody who can compassionately listen
and hold the space for you. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So after this birth, obviously falling pregnant again, I guess it sounds like you understood this and that you sat with this and started the process of healing.
I did and I didn't. I think I got through I hated being pregnant. So I was sick till 22. It was better this time. I was sick till 22 weeks as opposed to 36, which slight improvement. But it's not something I enjoy. And a lot of my friends, they have these beautiful glowing bumps and they love it. And I just have to get through.
Yeah, I mean, so, this is the reality for some women. You know, pregnancy for some women can be really tough.
Mm. Yeah, and it just wasn't enjoyable. But this time I didn't revisit the hypnobirthing. I've spent years doing yoga. I had a daily practice with my son. I was practicing till the day before I gave birth. So I was deep into my breath work. Mm. And actually with this one, I didn't have a yoga practice at all. And it just didn't feel nice. I had lots of pelvic girdle pain, and that didn't sit well doing yoga. So I just parked all of that and just left it. And the midwives were reminding me, do your pelvic floor exercises. And someone on one of your podcasts had said that you get these yogis with these incredibly strong pelvic floors, and it does often hinder the birth. And I heard that, and I was just like, do you know what? I'm going to park my pelvic floors and just not bother with that. And I wasn't peeing myself at all, and I wasn't having problems. But it just felt like something I should do, so I just didn't bother.
I love that you mentioned that, and it's really good for anyone listening that, you know, for some women it's important to do pelvic floor if you're weak and you haven't had, you're not, you know, someone who does like lots of exercise, and you know, then it can be good to strengthen your pelvic floor. But for, I would say, most women today, you also need to check in. Do you need to actually relax your pelvic floor? Because a lot of women, we carry chronic tension in our pelvic floor. So we need to do the opposite. We need to do breath work and stuff that relaxes our pelvic floor consciously, especially if you are, for example, someone who does Kegels all the time, or if you are someone who rides horses, usually has very strong pelvic floors, right? Or dancers, like really competitive dancers, or someone who does like Ashtanga, Vinyasa, like really strong yoga practice that also do a lot of root locks and really powerful kind of pelvic floor exercises. If you're one of these people listening now, consider this, you know, is your pelvic floor really tense? Is it chronically tense? Can you relax your pelvic floor? Because that will be more important for you. And it sounds like that's something that you identify going like, I probably have a strong pelvic floor. I probably don't need to exercise it. I need to relax it.
Yeah. And it's the learning how to relax it, which was really, that was an interesting take back, because it's not what the midwives tell you to do. But yes, it was something I heard from you. And actually another little gem that I got from this, it's, you can arm yourself with all the knowledge. But one of your ladies in the podcast had said that, obviously back in the day when we had these communities, and birth knowledge was shared between mother, daughter, and we had this wonderful female energy, and birth was part of everyday life. The wisdom is carried through stories. So having listened to loads of your podcasts and sort of throwing myself into them, the bits that stuck with me, the bits that I pulled from during birth, in the middle of this birth with my daughter, actually came from the stories and the listening to the people's stories, because facts and figures and they just don't stick with you. In the heat, in the moment of birth, it's not what sticks with you. It's the ingrained stories that people tell and share is what holds.
Definitely. And that's why also like repetition is so powerful. I mean, I repeat a lot of the time in every podcast episode, I say something that I probably have said 100 times before, but it's because also like the repetition in storytelling is so important and powerful for the subconscious mind.
Yeah. It's the one thing that trickles through, because you're not sitting down trying to learn something. You're just letting it flow into your subconscious and just streaming through.
So, okay. But this time you did decide to have a home birth.
I did decide to have, I pushed through with my home birth. And I do want to say for anyone listening who's planning a home birth, my husband was not on board with that. Having had this very scary experience, he was so anti it. It caused a lot of tension, and there were a lot of arguments and lots of tears in our household. And it was partly my fault, because I knew what his response would be. I had foreseen the issues that were going to crop up, and they did. And so I shut him out of my birth journey. I didn't involve him. And that, I think that isolated him, and that really hurt him. But I'd plowed forward with my decision to have a home birth and not told him about it. So I don't know, 23, 24 weeks. No, it was later than that. It was really quite close to birth, closer to the 30-week mark and things like that. So we didn't have a lot of time to get on board. And I'd backed him into this corner. And we went backwards and forwards, and there was a lot. And I think with that, because I knew what his response would be, I'd made the decision, and I'd thrown this, you either get on board or you get out. And it wasn't fair to him, but I knew what I was doing. And he kept asking me, why not just have it at the hospital? The hospital's right there. And yes, our hospital is right there, but our hospital's right there. Why not just go to hospital? It's safer for everyone else. And I'm there like, no, it's not safe for everyone. Here are my statistics. It's not safer. And he's all facts and figures. And I brought him to one of my midwife appointments, and he sat down with the midwife, and I don't think it helped him. But because I'd made the decision, he had to get on board. And that was hard. It was really hard. And I know it was purely out of concern for me and the baby. And this is where his fear was coming from.
Because he saw last time that you perceived to need medical assistance, right? Because it was really dangerous. And for him, that also was a trauma that he lived with. So he was scared that that would happen again. And me, you know, I work with couples just like you, where a lot of the times, well, 99% of the time, it's the woman who wants to have a home birth, and the man is like, why? And I've had, you know, I had one couple where the man was so anti, he was so closed, he almost got defensive instantaneously as we brought this up. But he actually came around, and now he's the biggest home birth advocate in the world. And this is my experience with most of the couples I work with, that especially because a lot of times it is also second time moms that come and say, okay, this time I do not want to go into that hospital, which hurt me or caused trauma. Yeah. I now know much more. I've done my research. I have educated myself, and I know it's safer to birth at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it all comes from a place of concern, but you know, when you're so in touch with your body and you're in touch with the pregnancy, and yes, I might have hated it all the way through, but I knew deep seated that this was going to be different. And because we were so close to the hospital, if we needed medical attention, it's not an issue. They would have rushed me off to hospital. It would have been fine. I trusted the process, and it was easy to say I trusted the process last time. I did trust the process. I trusted my body, but I think it was external influences which caused, it wasn't a breakdown. It was the pregnancy, the birth that needed to happen. But maybe it would have happened differently had my body been allowed to do what had happened. 100%. He kept questioning me, why do you want home birth? Why? And I couldn't articulate, in the time, I couldn't articulate that I didn't feel safe in the hospital. I didn't want to be there. I didn't trust the system to support me.
Yeah.
And his response to that was, well, it seems like you only want to have a home birth because you don't want to be in hospital. I was like, yes, this is exactly it. Yeah. He says, but why? Because I feel safe at home. And then he's just like, well, let me make a room for you. Let me be involved. Let me make a room. Let me make a space. And I was pushing back against that as well. I was like, I don't know what room I want to be in. I want to just wander around the house and just settle where I want to be free and easy, not constrained. And I think that was from the hospital. I didn't want to follow a regime. I didn't want to have to be a checklist. I just didn't want any of that. I wanted to throw all of that away, and I just wanted to just follow my body and do whatever it wanted. And that also didn't work for him, because he was just like, okay, well, I'll set up a room, I'll make your space, I'll put pictures up. And he wanted to do that for me, and I was throwing that away as well. Which again, he found that really hard. And all from a place of love. So much love. So when it came back to pregnancy, I had one midwife all the way through for the second one, and she was wonderful. She was an older lady. She only worked part time, and she was one of those midwives who only, you know, clearly just she loved her doing it, but she didn't need, it wasn't a job, this was a hobby now.
Yeah.
And still working within the NHS system. So she still has checklists to do, but she was such a big advocate for home birth. She's like, right, second time mum, perfect, go, home birth. She never asked to see a birth plan, which was wonderful. And she was, you know, someone who just, who felt like they believed in you.
Yeah.
And just was just so, so behind me with all my choices. And it was great. And the one time when she was on holiday, I saw another midwife. And she obviously, you know, did do all the measurements, da, 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 da. I was quite anemic all the way through. So every appointment had blood tests to check my iron levels. Yeah, that's just me. And that was fine. I took my iron supplements and it was never a problem. Mm. But they just kept an eye on that. But anyway, this other midwife was measuring me. She's like, oh, you're measuring small. Let's send you for a growth scan. Mm. And again, what I picked up from one of your stories is scans are, they are so flawed.
Yeah.
So all the way through my pregnancy with my first, my little boy, I was measuring very big and they were like, oh, this is a very big baby. This is a very big baby. We'll have to monitor this. And then with my daughter, they're like, oh, you're measuring very small, more growth scans. And interestingly, she came out bigger than him. So it's just...
Oh, isn't it telling?
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it is so ridiculous. Goodness me. And such important information for everyone to hear that ultrasounds are so inaccurate. They really, really are.
That's so unnecessary. They just they just put the fear of God in you, and you're just there like, yeah, this is stressful anyway, and you don't need this extra stress. And hey, if I have a big baby, so what?
You will be able to birth that baby.
You'll be birth baby. It's 100%. Yeah. I mean, I'm tall. I've never had any space with you know, some women have their baby sitting right up in their ribs. I never had any problems breathing. I have enough space in my body that if I have a big baby, it's fine.
Yeah. And even if you are a woman that is petite or whatever, it doesn't matter. Yeah, no, you will not grow a baby that you can't birth.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Not as a normal woman. Like, you can have a big baby and they will come out. Actually, gravity usually helps with big babies. They usually
force them down on the cervix. Yeah.
Easier. Yeah, I've had babies that have been like up to 5 kilos, which, you know, it's a big baby. Huge baby. And, you know, they come out. They come out. Yes. Don't be scared of big babies.
Don't be scared of big babies. Yeah, but also all the way through, I was obviously listening to your podcast. I had the Anna Mae Gaskin books, which I love the stories in that. The middle, you know, the second part of that, the Anna Mae Gaskin book, full of all the medical knowledge, it's American. So it is what it is. But it was, again, just collect all the knowledge.
Yeah. It's definitely, you know, I love Anna Mae Gaskin's stories because storytelling, again, is so magic. However, the medical information she shares, I do not agree with everything in that book. It's actually quite medical. She's quite medicalized, actually, from doctors that she's been working with. So if anyone who has that book, I would be...
Listen to the stories. They're great.
Read the stories and just breathe that in, but don't go, you know...
Don't get fixated on the learning.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of reading this time. For anyone who's giving birth in the UK, this is the book. It's How to Have a Baby by Natalie Meddings. And that was my Bible all the way through, because she's a doula and she gives us wonderful birth with wisdom. But because she works within the NHS system, there are enough, if you want medical evidence, like the NICE guidelines and the statistics, the hospital statistics and things like that, there are references in there where you can go and find those details should you wish to. And that for me was really, I wasn't too fussed about them, but it was really reassuring to be able to present my husband with facts, actual facts collected by hospitals and put it in front of him and say, read that. Mm-hmm. So for anyone in England, that's a great book.
Great.
For navigating the English system, the NHS system.
Do you want to share again the name and the author?
So it's How to Have a Baby by Natalie Meddings.
Beautiful.
And yeah, for the NHS system, it's great.
Are you ready to join me and others in being a part of the movement of the reclaiming of birth as a rite of passage and as a woman's sacred business? I'm calling you who recognizes birth as a sacred portal and a life-altering event worthy of honoring and safeguarding. You who want to walk alongside women through her rite of passage from maiden to mother and provide a safe, sacred, and physiological birth space. Here's your invitation to join me and other women from around the world in the Sacred Birthworker Mentorship Program, becoming a sacred birth advocate and space holder, the Beyond a Doula training, starting in January 2024. It's a full year's container of learning, embodying, and deepening into a true space holder and sacred advocate for a woman's rite of passage of birth. By weaving ancient and modern knowledge of her story, women's wisdom, physiological birth skills, and the art of sacred space holding, as well as diving into the variations of normal, medicalized birth, birth advocacy within the current unnatural maternity system, and so much more. This program is unique to its kind in its depth and how deep we go, and also that I offer you one-on-one mentoring with me personally assisting you in becoming the clear channel and the best space holder that you can be. You will be so held and so nurtured and so supported for a whole year inside our worldwide online community as you learn and embody the teachings and skills and start sharing your gifts with the world. If your intuition is ringing clear as you receive this invitation, find out more and apply at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or via the link in the show notes. So let's dive into your birth story.
So my birth, yes.
Yes. So tell us, did you have any early signs of labor approaching, or take us back to the day?
So I lost my mucus plug on the Wednesday, and that was at, I can't remember, but it was after 40 weeks. And I had my appointment at 39 weeks with my midwife, and she's like, okay, well, hopefully we'll book you in for another appointment at 31 plus six or whatever, but hopefully we won't see you then. And at the appointment, she's like, she did offer me a sweep. And I refused that. And she was the one who came and saw my daughter and signed us off. But she did say, it's a checklist. I have to have offered it to you. I have to have ticked to say I'd offered it to you, whether she agrees with it or not. She has to follow the system because she works in that system.
That's it. But that's the good thing about, even if you work in the system, for anyone who's listening, who is a midwife, right? Because I know there's doulas and midwives listening to this podcast. Even if you work in the system and you have to check all these boxes, you know, you just present it in a way that's like, yeah, so this is a checkbox. However, there's no evidence that show that actually doing a sweep right now would do anything for you. Because the actual thing is, first of all, I don't think fingers should be in the vagina at all, if possible. And if they are, it should be for, you know, medical guidance during labor.
Yeah.
Because there's obviously a reason for it and never for routine. Anyways, there's this thought that if you do three stretch and sweeps, one day apart, or, you know, there's different kind of guidelines around these, then that will increase your chance of going into labor. But hey, if you think about that, what about you have just, maybe you should have just gone into labor anyways in those, after those 3 days, because usually it's offered, well, it used to be offered at 41 weeks.
Yeah.
Now it's at 40. And for some, it's already at 38, 39 in some countries, right? Which, nah, I don't think the evidence is at all anywhere solid on that that would be a good thing. And when it does, it's uncomfortable. It's
invasive.
Oh my God, it's intimate. It's like, why would you do that? And it might make you have false labor, like false contractions that just makes you have painful, you know, surges and contractions, not doing anything. Yeah. And you might bleed and it might be uncomfortable. And then there's a risk. It could break your waters. I mean, I could go on. Obviously, I don't like this.
I'm completely behind you on that. So I declined that. And in my head, I was like, this baby will come when it's ready. And you can tell yourself that. Well, for me, I could tell myself that as much as I wanted. But there's still this little niggling feeling like, well, if I get to 41 weeks, they're going to start talking to me about inductions and da da da. And I know it's all my choice. Saying something is one thing, but actually completely trusting it is so, well, I found it so difficult.
Especially when most of the general public will have a different point of view. Like, yeah. You feel it. You feel that society thinks that if you're over 40 weeks, and you know, ooh, you're on the clock now. And yeah. It's almost like you have this time bomb inside of you that, you know, the baby will like blow up. You know? Yeah.
What's that? But particularly yeah. when like doctors are saying things like, you're harming your baby.
Yeah.
And when you're told that, it's of course you're gonna. Of course you. I mean, no mother goes into labor with the intention of harming their baby. And that's it's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. And having birth taking the power, you know, the power away from women and the inner power is just so strong. But the medical system devalues innate knowledge and its wisdom.
Absolutely. And it's really no evidence that shows that it's a risk for baby to go to 41, over. 42, 43, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. There's risk with dates, the induction.
Yeah, and dates are they pull these dates out of the air at the time of scans, like with my son. Because I tracked that on an app and I said, it came up with this is the day he was conceived, and it gave me the due date.
Mm-hmm.
in inverted commas. And when I had my 12-week scan, they'd brought the date forward and said, okay, no, he'll be born the day forward. Interestingly enough, he was born on his due date according to the app. I know due dates are completely fictitious, but in that situation, when you had a week taken away from you, that's a whole week that's you're on the clock for.
Absolutely.
And it adds stress. So
the thing is, you know, all women are different with their menstrual cycle. Some has short ones, some has really long ones, right?
Absolutely.
And I know so many women come to me and say, I know the day we conceived. I know it.
Yeah.
But the system will not listen to a woman because she doesn't really know, does she?
She doesn't really know. My computer says.
Oh, silly woman thinking she knows stuff. What?
Yeah. It's so true. I'd got to 40 weeks. I wasn't feeling anything. Nothing at all. And I lost my mucus plug and I was like, right, tonight's gonna be the night. And then the next night, tonight's gonna be another night. And my husband actually all the way through, and again, comes from a place of love, and he just wants to be prepared. But he was like, is tonight going to be the night? Like, you're adding extra pressure and stress. Those are not helpful questions. on the Saturday night, I'd spoken to my homeopath. Because I had a homeopath with Freddie, my first one, with Waller's jabs and things like that. And she did massages and we did yoga with her and everything else, pregnancy yoga. And I'd asked her for an induction massage. And her wonderful words to me at the massage, and she does it all on acupressure points. And she says, this massage is not about this baby. This baby will come when it's ready. This massage is to let you let go of, to relax you out of your headspace.
That's it.
All I could do was smile and nod because I knew she was right. I knew she was right. But anyway, she had this lovely massage, which was just delightful. It was really, really lovely. But from that Wednesday to the Saturday, I was having like little tightenings during the day. I was like, okay, it could be happening tonight. Didn't happen. And then on Saturday night, as I said to my husband, have a beer because you need to relax.
Yeah.
and you're stressing me out. You need to have a beer and we'll just see what happens. And nothing happened. So it comes the Sunday and we'd organized for our friends to come around. We're going to go for a walk, just to take the dogs for a walk and everything else. And I got up that morning and I was grumpy. I was so grumpy. I got up and made breakfast. My son was here. We were having a play. He was being really, really exuberant. And he was just loud. And I was just getting a bit like, oh, why? Please just shush. And having thought all the way through, I was like, oh, I want my son at the birth. I want him there. Nope, didn't want him there. No. So made breakfast. Our friends arrived. And I was like, I'm not actually going to come down. You go for your walk. I'm not going to come down. I'm just going to stay up here and just wash the dishes and just do some breathing. And I was sort of doing the swaying and the rocking, and I wasn't in pain. It was just uncomfortable. So I was just on the kitchen counter, just had my hands pressed to the kitchen counter and just do some swaying, some rocking on the hips. And I was there like, okay, well, maybe this is it. Sort of things are starting off.
Did you feel like there was contractions coming, or was the uncomfortable feeling? Do you want to explain it?
The uncomfortable feeling, it felt like my hips were, it didn't feel like a contraction. Mm. It felt like my hips were seizing up. They were just getting tight. You know when you get cramp in your hips, and if you're in bed and you need to stand up and just shake it out. That's what it felt like, but it felt like a prolonged cramp. So it wasn't sore, it was just uncomfortable. Mm. This was, I don't know, around 10:30 in the morning. And I was like, right, we've got ages, because babies don't come during the day. Hilarious. So our friends had arrived, they were downstairs in the garden having coffee. Having drinks, and I text my husband at like 11 o'clock. I was like, can you please come upstairs? Missed the text. So at this point, I was a bit like, okay, I'm having to breathe and move, and maybe this is it. Maybe we're getting there.
And still just uncomfortable feelings in your hips.
By this point, it kind of moved to my tummy, and I got really hot. So I'd stripped off all my clothes. And I was like, it's a hot day, it's fine, we've got ages. And I'd moved upstairs to my son's room, and he's got quite a tall chest of drawers, and I was just leaning on that, and when I was looking down at my belly, I could see my belly going like square. So obviously when a contraction was happening, it was going square. And I was like, okay, well, this says, I think it's happening now, maybe it's happening. And I had this thought that, goodness, if this is what's going to be like for the next few hours, and it could be a long time of this is quite intense. So I phoned my husband. I think you need to come upstairs. He was obviously sending everyone off, saying goodbye to everyone. Maybe this is happening. He called my mum to come pick up our son. She lives really close. And then I thought, oh, I need the loo. And I never made the connection of I need to poop and baby's coming. So I went to the loo and sat in the loo. And obviously on a lot of your podcasts, your ladies were saying that they found the loo a really good place to for labour. Hated that. Felt really uncomfortable.
It becomes really intense, isn't it?
It does become really intense.
Especially if it's going really powerfully quickly. So we're talking about, it's been about an hour, and it went from having a bit of uncomfortable hips to then just getting really hot, stripping off, and then feeling like it was quite intense contractions. Are we talking like a contraction a minute, or how often are they coming, or are they just lasting?
I don't ever remember being out of a contraction. It was just intense the whole time. I was still very much in the room. So this is why I didn't think it was happening, because I was absolutely present. And then I was just like, well, for my last pregnancy, I had my eyes closed. I was completely, completely internalized. And I was absolutely in the room, absolutely focused, absolutely knew what was going on. And then I think I felt my water just pop, but I didn't get the big gush of water.
On the toilet?
On the toilet. But another thing to mention, I think I'd had a little bit of a hind leak all the way for, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks or so, because I was getting leaking. But just a little bit of leaking. And it was a little bit like yellowy green. I was like, oh my goodness, she's had a poo. It was very scary. And then I was furiously searching through your backlog of stories. And I was like, has anyone said anything about this? Because I know the minute I go to hospital or call a midwife about this, there's going to be all to do. They're going to get me in. They're going to yank this baby out. So I was like, I'll be fine. She's fine. There's no distress. She's still moving. So I'm just going to close my eyes to it and completely ignore it. And we'll just hope for the best.
Was this during the weeks before? Or was this during labor?
This is the week before.
All right.
I'm not sure what you would suggest doing in that time, but I was so anti going to the hospital. So I was just, I don't want to tell anyone because I don't want to go to hospital. So that's where I was with it. And I could still feel her moving. And I was like, well, this must happen to other people. So we'll just go with it. And it wasn't like a big thick soup color or a dark green. It was just like yellowy green. It was very light. So I was just, okay, whatever. I felt the pop, and then I stood up from the loo and I was like, right, what do I do now? Because this is going to be messy. So I'd got myself into the bath. Obviously, bathtub's right next to the toilet. So I was like, right, this mess is going to be contained until my husband gets upstairs. And for my first labour, I'd planned all the oil. So I packed my oils, I'd washed towels because having known I was having a home birth, I'd washed the towels, put them all in the downstairs room. We live with three floors and I was on the top floor. And so I had these clean towels, had the big plastic sheet, had my oils, had my music, had it all sorted out. No need for that. So I got in the bath. My husband had come upstairs, like, you need to phone mum. And I think you should call the midwives, the med centre, the MAC centre, maternity assessment centre. So he was on the phone to the midwives. And I sort of felt down and I was like, I think I can feel a head. I think I can feel hair.
You're in the bath now?
I'm in the bathtub. No water.
No water.
No water. just got in the bath because I just wanted the mess to be contained.
Right, because you were leaking from the water.
I was leaking. What do I do? So he was on the phone. He was the midwives were talking through it. And I had him spraying hot water onto my lower back, because it just felt nice. And I was doing little poos at the time, and I was like, ugh, this is grim. Maybe should have said, like, okay, it's coming now. But anyway, so I put the plug in the bath as well, it was really quick by this point, and put the plug in the water, sat down in the water, just on my heels, and just breathed for a little bit. And my husband had said, oh, I can see the head. So the midwives on the phone had said, try and turn me over. But by this point, I was like, right, there's not enough water in the bath for her to be born into water. So I yanked the plug out. I got my one knee up and I could see her head. And then my husband obviously was trying to catch her. And as I turned over, she kind of just flopped out. And so I scooped her up and took the cord up from around her neck. And that's another thing my husband was really, really afraid of, the cord being wrapped around the neck. Turns out it's pretty normal. That's happened.
Pretty
and
normal.
Pretty
yes.
normal.
Around 10% of babies will have the cord around their neck, and it's all normal.
It's all normal. And I could hear him saying, oh, she's really, before, while she was, while her head was out, she's really blue. She's really blue.
That's good.
That's good. Yeah.
That means she has good perfusion of blood.
Yeah. And I hear the midwife saying, that's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine. She's fine. So obviously just reassuring him. So I scooped her up from the bath, took a cord up, lay back and put her on my chest. And that was birth. It was over so quickly. So we had our friends left at 20 past 11. And by 11:57, she was born.
They left 20 past 11 and 11:50 she was born. So 57
Okay, so about 40 minutes later.
40 minutes later, she was here.
Wow. And you didn't really know you were in labor all of a sudden your waters broke and then there was a head.
And then there was a head, yeah. You know, you read all about the signs, like you're internalized, you're going to shut the world out. None of that happened.
It doesn't have time to.
I was looking out for all the signs and they just weren't there. And I expected it to be, it was intense, but it was not painful. The pushing sensation, having said I never got the pushing sensation with my first, the pushing sensation for my second was so, my body just took over. And there was nothing I could do to stop it. There was it was happening regardless. And with all the breathing in the world, which you either, I don't know, follow your body or you panic. I don't know. I sat back and just let it happen because it was just that feeling of your. I didn't feel any of the baby coming down to the birth. It was just there, and my body was just throwing this baby out in the most intense way. I tore along my episiotomy scar, and I think that's probably because it was so quick, and I didn't breathe it out or anything. I thought it just happened, and I got some grazes as well. Anyway, she was born. Then my phone rang and it was the midwife because the MAC center, had rung the home birth midwives. So I picked up my phone and, okay, I'm 5 minutes away. I was like, oh, she's here, with her on my chest. And she's here, the midwife saying, okay, I'll be there as soon as I can. I'm just stuck at the traffic lights. And they came in 12 minutes late because obviously we have a ring doorbell. So the timestamp showed us when they arrived. So the midwives arrived 12 minutes later, the first one. The second one arrives a little after that. But because there are no midwives here, the hospital had called an ambulance out as well. But they didn't arrive until an hour later. So I know. I think it was because the midwives had arrived. So they came upstairs. I had her on my chest. By this point, she was feeding already. Which was amazing, and they kind of just arrived, and it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. I couldn't have asked for better, because it got me away from the whole the pressure of being in the system. Yeah. I wanted midwives there for my husband to support him, and I did rewrite my birth plan, just a little handwritten note, and it essentially said. Unless you're concerned, don't come near me, don't touch me, stay in the corner and sit in your hands, essentially. Mm. Just leave me to do it. And I got that birth because there was no one shoving a Doppler on me, no one trying to talk to me or anything else like that. And they arrived and they stitched me up and they moved me over to the bed. And then it was my placenta. My placenta came really, really quickly as well. She just looked and she said it was just sitting there and maybe you can get up and squat. So no, I just lay there, and I remember one of your other ladies saying she just coughed. So I just coughed a few times and birthed the placenta. And we just left that until it stopped pulsating and it went white. And then husband cut the cord, and it was just the most, having had this incredibly intense, incredibly quick birth where you could just blink and it happened. And the aftermath was so relaxed, and it was just wonderful. It was we lay on the bed. The midwives are here. They stitched me up, and I'd prepped this tea station for them. I'd got them biscuits. This was all when I thought they were going to be here for hours and hours and hours and hours. That didn't happen. And I think they were a bit disappointed because I don't have many home births. And on the board of the hospital, there was only myself and another lady who were down for home births that month. And I was like, oh my goodness, why? Yeah. Why? But I mean, that's the way of things. And then the midwives left, and we just we lay in bed and we're like, right, what do we do now? and just lay there and enjoyed it. It was delightful. It was divine and wonderful. That was so quick. But also, interestingly, having torn along the episiotomy scar, they did stitch me up, and I know it could have healed back up. And I remember you saying that unless you can be sure that you're going to be in bed and just relaxing, you don't need to be stitched up. And I just knew I couldn't do that. Not with my dog, my boy, my just everything else. There's no way I can just lie in bed and relax. Yes, I can do my best to do that. But so that healed a lot quicker. It hurt a lot less. I did get some grazing, which was more painful than the tear.
Yeah. Because there was scar tissue. So it's quite common that if you had an episiotomy, if you do tear a second birth, it usually is along that, because it is on a natural cut, right?
Yeah.
So when we tear naturally, then the fibers just come back together beautifully. But when we are cut, it's not as well. It doesn't heal as well, and also can create more scar tissue, which is also why maybe you felt a bit numb there too when it did tear, compared to the new grazing, which was fresh and
yeah. Yeah, so it was delightful. It was divine. It was just,
beautiful. What a quick birth. Crazy quick.
So quick.
And I wonder if it is because you did have a hind water leak that was opening you slowly. You know, and you said your mucus plug, you know, knowing obviously that a mucus plug can come away and grow back together, and, you know, it doesn't tell us that this is when the baby's coming. But as you just mentioned, you might have gone for 1 or 2 weeks with a hind water leak. And this is the thing, like if you suspect that you have one, you're recommended to go into hospital and to check that. And then you're on the clock, and you're recommended not to go over, you know, well, 24 hours today, you know, it's like 18 hours or even some would you say, oh, let's just induce you. However, the risk of infection is very, very little, and it starts to go up a bit more after 72 hours. But, you know, for example, if someone breaks their waters and they're preterm, they're just kept, you don't induce them, right? Yeah. And you give, you know, potentially there's antibiotics, you know, it all depends on where you're at and policies and all of that. But, you know, it's a variation of normal. Obviously, your baby was fine and you tuned in and you felt that. As you said, you were checking in movements and, you know, you will know if you have an infection, because that's the risk, right? Mm-hmm. When the waters break, it's the risk of infection traveling up to the baby and infecting the baby. Mm-hmm. But you know if you have an infection. If you smell discharge, if you have more discharge, it's smelly. If you get a fever, you know, you feel it if you're in your body. And you also check in with your baby. How's your baby feeling? And, you know, if you have an infection, your baby probably will get one from if you have broken in waters. But it usually also will be the same, wouldn't it, that you would feel if something was wrong with your baby. Yeah. You're very in tune with your baby as a mother.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And was your baby fine?
She was absolutely fine. She was absolutely fine. Nothing wrong at all.
So another variation of normal. This is a great story, you know? Because not often do women go with broken waters, you know, for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of evidence on is that good or bad, right? Because women won't be, in quotation marks, allowed, which we know is bullshit. But this is how our world works, right? You just get induced. And, you know, you're lucky if you're not pressured to go and have an induction before 72 hours, let alone 1-2 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, what a story. So if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now who's about to have her first baby and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
Arm yourself with all the knowledge. Just do your reading, do your learning, because if you choose to go into a hospital setting, you have to be prepared to advocate for yourself. And you have to... either you or your birth partner, if you've got a birth partner who is completely on board to support you, great, get a doula if you're going to hospital, because it's so important to be able to keep your space safe. I didn't get a doula, I didn't get a midwife, because we have this wonderful system which is free. I'm not having any more. I'm done with being pregnant. But I think, yes, we have this wonderful system, but it is still a system, and it doesn't allow for the individual. So unless you are fully prepared, and you have someone there to support you, you're going to fall into the trap of handing over your power.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to own your birth and sit in it, and to feel to come out of it and know and trust that everything has gone the way it can, but you were supported through it, as opposed to being a product of it, is important. And it's transformative and freeing and healing, and so healing.
Mm.
So arm yourself with what knowledge and wisdom.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Trish, for sharing your fast and furious and glorious redemptive birth, and sharing the wisdom that you learned from going into the system, and in one sense, becoming a victim for the ending of that, which so many women do, even as they come in fully prepared to have a natural birth. Had you, I'm sure, had a home birth with your first, I'm sure you would not have experienced the episiotomy and the long tooth.
Yeah, I think things would have gone very differently, but I couldn't have come into my second birth without having gone through that. And you're given the birth that you have at the time.
Mm,
and absolutely. Everything's a learning curve, and everything's a journey.
Absolutely. And now you can share this very important information with other women to prepare them for their birth, which is such a blessing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.